Our first panelist is Tawana Black, the founder and CEO of the Center for Economic Inclusion, a cross-sector social enterprise committed to strengthening our region's civic infrastructure and collective capacity to catalyze shared prosperity and advance an inclusive economy. She's also the executive director of the Northside Funders Group, a group of 20 corporate, community, and private foundations, along with public sector investors, committed to aligning investments and strategies to catalyze racial and economic equity in North Minneapolis. Tawana was a Bachelor of Public Administration, has a Bachelor of Public Administration from Washburn University in Topeka, Kansas. Tawana, thank you for being here. Next to her is Dr. Dolores Henderson, a recently retired, although I don't actually believe that that's true. If you know Dolores, you know she's never going to retire from anything. She was the longest sitting administrator in the state of Minnesota. She served 17 school districts and 20,000 students and families over 46 years. She has instructed at Hamline, Metropolitan State, the University of Minnesota. Dr. Henderson has a BS in elementary education from Wilberforce University in Ohio, the nation's first private, historically black college. She has a master's and specialist degrees in curriculum and instruction from the University of Minnesota, and a PhD in education administration from the University of Minnesota. She's also received an honorary doctorate of humane letters from McAllister College. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Henderson. Finally, Mayor Mary Giuliani Stevens has been the mayor of Woodbury since 2011. She is the city's first female mayor and a great friend and partner of Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity. Mayor Stevens is president of the Woodbury Economic Development Authority and chair of the Woodbury Housing and Redevelopment Authority. And she serves on a wide variety of commissions and boards related to policy, transit, and other community issues. She has a BA in political science and speech communication from the University of Michigan and a JD from William Mitchell College of Law. Please join me in welcoming Mayor Stevens. Thank you. So, I just want a good conversation, help us understand how the work that Habitat does can impact the community from your perspectives. And I'm gonna begin with a question for you, Tawana. As we think about revitalizing North Minneapolis, where you have done a lot of your work, how do we avoid some of the negative effects that gentrification and sometimes in the name of economic development, we kick the people out of the community that have historically lived there? How do we ensure long-time residents reap the benefits of the investments in our neighborhoods?
Well, thank you, first of all, for inviting me to serve on today's panel, and a big thank you to all of you who have been sponsors and guests for this amazing luncheon. And when I think about North Minneapolis, I was struck by Lanisha's comments and the comments around North Minneapolis being a place of choice. And for many of us who are invested in creating places for people to live and for people to thrive, we often don't think about neighborhoods like the North Side or the East Side or the Brooklands or other places in our region that suffer from disinvestment and are known for having people with low incomes as places of choice, that people actually want to live there, that they're not only there as a place of last resort. So when I think about that question about how we continue to invest in affordable housing and how we make sure that we're actually thinking about the people who live there today, who are invested there today, and make sure that we don't gentrify them out as we increase the value of property there, I think it requires intentionality. It requires remembering that many people have called these neighborhoods home for generations and want to continue to call them home, only they want to be able to do that through ownership, by building wealth, by keeping that land within their families in just the way that she described, by passing down those homes to their children and their children's children and their children's children's children, in the way that many, many people have been able to do in our, not only our state and our city, but in our country for decades, but that unfortunately too many people haven't. So it requires us having that intentionality that says, how do we not only make the investment in building the homes and building the land, but also in policies within our organizations, not only public policy, but policies within our organizations that say, how do we think about not only a home, but prosperity and opportunity that's long-lasting, that can pay off for generations, both in ways that are quantifiable on the front end, but also in ways that families can quantify in just the way that she did on the back end for generations to come.
So, Dr. and Mayor Giuliani Stevens, you know, in your communities and from a inside the school perspective, obviously, you've seen the impact of families that have stable housing, both in terms of what happens in the classroom or what happens in community, Dr. Henderson, can you talk a little bit about how you've seen, you know, maybe some examples that you've seen about the impact that, stable housing has for the kids that you have seen over the years?
Well, first of all, I just want to commend the young woman because I do know her mother, who's been a fighter. She didn't mention that her mother has always been out there fighting for the rights of all people. And so I commend you. And you have a beautiful baby there. And I see she's gotten some of that fight from her mother. As well as I see a lot of familiar faces out here, especially Aaron Dady, my mentee. Just wave your hand, Aaron, who works for Premier Bank. So thank you. So I know they're going to be very supportive of us. So thank you, thank you. You know, I don't think we realize the impact that affordable housing really will have on us as being a healthy community. We're not healthy until all of us are healthy. And I don't think we realize that so often. You know, Wellstone always said, we're all better if we're all better. And we have to be better and we have to be healthier by helping our children in dealing with stability, as we heard earlier. Stability does make a difference. And really, a community, housing is the glue to a healthy community. Housing, affordable housing, is critical for us today. You know, I'm reminded of a quote that Martin Luther King Jr. stated that you can watch from a staircase, but you need to take the first step. And here today, all of us are going to take the first step by helping to make our children healthier in these classrooms, being able to be open-minded, being able to be principled and balanced, and realize that they have a life in front of them that can be very successful. And so by giving, you're helping that child realize, I will have a place to go at the end of the day. I will have food on a table where I can sit around and say, that's my community, because I'm in a community where people care about me, that I'm valued. I don't have to go from house to house or on the sidewalk or under a bridge with my mom, or in a car. And I've had this, folks. I've had parents come to me crying, saying, I don't know where I'm going tonight, Dr. Henderson. I really don't know. And I would say to the parent, this is why so-and-so is acting out. This is why your child came in crying this morning when I said good morning. I always had the habit, as Aaron would say to you, of saying good morning to children. And when they came in so distraught, I would say, it's going to be okay. And some of them would cry and just hug me and say, thank you. And later on, I'd go into that classroom. And I would say, I want to see so-and-so. I would bring the child out into the hallway and say, why were you so sad this morning? Why were you in tears this morning? And the child so often would say, I don't know where I'm going at the end of the day, Dr. Henderson. And I would say, you're going to a place where you will be able to sleep tonight. And the child would usually say, thank you. I would call the parent, and the parent would say, we're in the car for tonight. But you know what? Habitat for Humanity. I did know the previous CEO, and you know what? As Chris Coleman has mentioned, they will continue to reach out to our families. There was always a place for a child to go at the end of the day when I contacted Habitat for Humanity or any other resources in our community. That's what St. Paul and Minneapolis are about. That's what the state of Minnesota is about, making sure that every child feel valued and feel as though they are loved, regardless of their circumstances. Stability is critical. We have the widest achievement gap in the country. So when Chris Coleman talked about the widest racial gap, it's all aligned. Housing, employment, and education. You don't separate the three. If you have a great education, as Jess was mentioned to us earlier, you have employment. If you have employment, you have housing. But many of our young people today don't have that stability that they really need. there is a great impact on the learning of our students in these classrooms. So the achievement gap will continue to widen as long as we have a housing that many of our children will not be able to say, I have a home, I have a community. And community means stability. So there is a great impact on the learning. So keep in mind, when you read about the achievement gap, you stop and think about, does that child have stability in living in a home or under the bridge or on the street? Think about that. So thank you. It does have a great impact on the learning.
Thank you, Doctor. Well, in Twin Cities, Habitat for Humanity works in 58 communities across the metropolitan area. So we are really spread out. We obviously do a lot of our key work in Minneapolis and in St. Paul. But one of our incredible partners is the city of Woodbury. Woodbury, outside of the two core cities, has more Habitat homes than any other community. And that is a direct can be directly attributed to the leadership of Woodbury and Mayor Giuliani Stevens. So Mayor, thank you, first of all, for your incredible partnership with Habitat. But I'm curious whether in your community, whether you've seen some pushback. You know, a lot of folks, you know, we have NIMBYism, we don't want affordable housing. You know, that's something that should happen someplace else. How are you so successful, and what kind of pushback have you had as you've developed Habitat houses in your community?
Thanks for the question, Chris. First, thanks for inviting me. And he forgot to say something else we had in common. We both were unsuccessful in securing our party's nomination in the race for governor, so we share that in common, too.
And happier for it.
Yeah. Some days, yes, some days, no. We'll be honest here. But thank you all for coming out to listen and learn and support Habitat. We have been a partner and champion Habitat because the model works. It's successful. Success breeds success, and we'll continue that partnership. You know, your question about getting buy-in from the community, for me, it's not really any different than anything else that comes into the community where people are going to be faced with some kind of change. And a couple of things for us. One is just the process you go through and the extra steps we take in neighborhood meetings and answering people's questions and being transparent about it. We really haven't had any huge issues other than the ordinary issues and just bring change to a community. Secondly, I think because we've had such a successful partnership with Habitat and the community has embraced these families and the families have embraced their neighbors in the community, there's a buy-in because it's been a successful program. And so we'll continue with that partnership and we'll continue to look for new opportunities for that.
You know, that's wonderful, and I wish that we had all of the mayors in all of our communities that felt the same way. We still continue to fight the battle in some of our communities that people are opposed to affordable housing. And I have to tell you, it always struck me, we're building housing for workers. We're building housing for community members that are going to raise children like Lanisha. And, of course, we're so struck by her story. And the impact of it, and then that reinvestment back in the community. For each of you, maybe just throw it out, kind of what was it, you know, as you listened to Lanisha talk, did anything resonate with you? Was there a particular part of her story that we should walk away with and think about how we can do more of? Come on, I'll throw it out to
I'll
you.
I'll go ahead and start, because Lanisha, I just met you this morning, and you're just an amazing person, first of all. So what a privilege for me to meet you. But your story to me, it's your really passion and commitment to your family and your community that resonated with me. I mean, you can hear it in her story. And, you know, the line, the grass is always greener on the other side. Applaud you for saying, I'm going to make it green right here where I live. And she wants a legacy for her family. I love that she sees what her mother did for her and she wants to pass that legacy on in the wealth accumulation there too, but just really in how to be successful as a family. So to me, that's what resonated. And can I just I want to take an extra minute to talk a little bit, if I can, Chris, about...
There are no timers here.
Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. Like the unique partnership we have with Habitat. So we've partnered with them over many years, and One of the unique things that came up during the recession, and I think this will help talk about what's happened in the whole community. So we have Habitat homes throughout our entire community. You will not know where our affordable or workforce housing is in the community when you drive around with Woodbury. So we partner with private developers, the same standards. Well, we had a development called Garden Gate Development that was going to be part private sector, and then Habitat was going to build, I want to say, maybe 10 homes in that development. The recession came, and the developer went belly up. And so now we're left with incomplete infrastructure and maybe a few homes that had gone up, and that wasn't going to come back anytime soon. Well, in a unique partnership with Habitat, and I don't know, it may have been your first opportunity to step in and be a developer, but Habitat stepped up to the plate and became a developer, and we were able to leverage, kind of briefly leverage some county HRA dollars. And then we're a recipient of CBGD and home dollars, so we were able to leverage some of that. And in that partnership and allowing Habitat to be a developer, that entire development is Habitat homes. And those members, because when you do a Habitat home, you all know you have an investment. I mean, they go through classes. So Habitat doesn't just invest in the homes, they invest in the families that live in the homes. So they go through classes and they learn about budgeting and they learn about home maintenance. And they have to put in, I don't know the exact hours, but I'm guessing somewhere amongst 300 plus hours in building their own home. And when you put that much sweat equity into something, you take ownership and pride in it and you take care of it. And every time I'd go out to that site, whether it was a CEO build or just a build, those homeowners that had built theirs were right next door building the next one with their new neighbors that were going to come in there. And they developed closeness in their neighborships and then connection to the community. And so I think, Lanisha, a lot of your story I see happening right in the community of Woodbury in those neighborhoods. So thank you again.
That's great. That's a powerful...
Thanks.
A powerful example of the multiplying impact of Habitat in community. Tawana, I don't know, you know, whether it's in the work that you've done or what you've seen, and maybe picking up a little bit from the pieces of Lanisha's story, I'd love to hear your perspective.
You know, when I think about that story, a couple things that were mentioned were, one, the multiplier effect, and I love that you played off of those words that she used as well, but seeing that effect not only play out in the dollars, right, so we can clearly make a financial investment and then see that investment continue to multiply over and over again, but to see the multiplier effect and have it quantified by someone whose mom set out to say, wait a minute, I want to invest in my family, and then to have someone who says, I can see that, and I want to help you understand that. And when I think about what Dr. Henderson shared earlier about students who come into classrooms every day, who are suffering effects that too many of us look on the surface of test scores and school scores and assume is really just about families who either can't compete, can't be educated, or families who didn't prepare their kids to be educated, or teachers who can't teach. We tend to put it in one of those three buckets, but really to stop and break down that about, wait a minute, having a home really created enough, not just stability, but enough community of thriving that allowed her to not only go on and succeed, but to go on and thrive and prosper. And I think about the multiplier effect of her having that radio show as a high schooler and all the other high schoolers that touched. That multiplier effect, and how many high schoolers then sought out to say, okay, family, we should have a home and go beyond an apartment. What standard did that change for them, and what aspirations did that create for her peers? Being able to quantify that for me is huge, and the intentionality that's required to create room for everyone. I heard you use those words, room for everyone. And in our community, I think we're at a point, after having studied disparities to death, to ask the question about whether or not we want to have room for everyone, not just in our homes, the way that she described. I love that too. I love to throw a good party. I love to cook big.
Right.
So when there's room for everyone in the house, it gets exciting. But when we think about our neighborhoods and the way that Mayor Juliana Stevens just described Woodbury, where you can't drive around and tell which one is a Habitat home, which one is an affordable home, and which one is your home. But you just see community, where there is truly room for everyone to thrive. That's what I heard in that story. And when I think about our work at the Northside Funders Group and our work at the Center for Economic Inclusion, where we're trying to work to bring all of the sectors together To create an economy that works for everyone, it requires us first believing that it is possible to have room for everyone. And too often, we haven't had an opportunity to create affordable housing that isn't segmented, where we don't have the low-income housing over here and the mid-income housing over there and the really nice income housing far, far away so that they don't have to see or think about the people who are in that low-income housing and what they might bring into this neighborhood. So to see the intentionality that's happening here at Habitat, not only in building homes, but what I also heard you mention earlier was in giving mortgages so that people can go out and qualify for the homes that they want so that they have that choice to create room for everyone. It gives me hope that we are on that path to create an economy that truly does work for everyone and a community where everyone knows that there is room for them in this community.
I loved her story because I go back with a lot of the educators who started the Sumatac program, and I had really extended family members who attended, and I had to go and deal with their conferences because the parents were working two and three jobs. But I also want to recognize the former mayor of Minneapolis, Sharon Sells Belton, who was a strong person who believed in sharing her home with everyone, and there was always room for one more. So I really appreciated your comment about making sure there was room for one more. And your mother worked closely with Sharon, I'm quite sure, to make sure that occurred with your family instability to have that room for one more. So thank you for that, because that's what we're about, folks, here in this room. We're about sharing one room. I come from a family of 17 children, so I know what it is to share a room. I know, I know, but there was always room for one more. I recall growing up as a senior in high school, and there were 30 of us in one house because my sisters had gotten married and they had children, and cousins came from the South and they had to have a place to stay in Ohio. And I recall saying to Alan Page one evening, I said, have you been home lately? We grew up in the same community, Alan Page and myself. And I said, have you been home lately? And he said, no. I said, well, I have. He said, but I've built homes for others in our community. That's what it's about, folks. Us building and helping each other within this community. It is critical. You can't sit beside a person and be able to judge a person. We have to stop being so judgmental when we go into these neighborhoods wondering who's in a Habitat home or renting. 50% of the people in St. Paul are renters. 50%. That's a high percentage. Now, we saw the statistics up about on the screen earlier as far as ownership, home ownership. Let's stop and think about that. How can we talk about economic growth? And many of our people don't have homes. There's no home ownership. When you own something, you believe it belongs to you. You believe that it does belong to you. So let's stop and think about a child having a home to go to at night with the help of you. With the help of all of us coming together saying, it means stability. And that word kept coming out more and more as Laisha talked to us today about home ownership and what it meant to her family. But here again, I go back to the fact that if we care, we will do. And we have to care about our neighbor. We have to know that our neighbor is just as important as we are to ourselves. So I say to you today, it is critical, as that was mentioned earlier about an education and what it meant to her. She was a young woman as a leader when she was 13, 14 years old, talking about what it meant to get an education. So I want to thank her for her comments. She did an outstanding job. I told her I would let her mother know when she came from vacation. Her mother isn't here today because she's on vacation. But I think we should let her mother know that it's important to stay in the fight for housing, affordable housing in our community. And I know later on, Chris is going to let us have the opportunity of telling a story. And I have a great story.
Let's just hear it right now.
Yeah, okay. What's your story?
I'll share it now. A few years back, I had the fortune of meeting a young woman who was on the cover of Habitat for Humanity, Yolanda. And I think she spoke last year at this conference, at the luncheon. So I saw her last Sunday. She's a parishioner in the same church I attend. And I said to her, I said, one day you came into the school and you looked so forlorn, you looked so upset. And she said, I remember that day. She said, it was a day that I became homeless. She said, it was a day that I thought my world was coming to an end. She said, and you knew that something was wrong with me when you looked into my eyes. She said, I teared up. I said, yes, you did. I said, and as you were standing there, I looked down at Dale, who was a fourth grader. I looked at Taylor, who was a sixth grader. And they looked up at me and said, Dr. Henderson, we don't know where we're going to sleep tonight. And she said, that broke my heart. She said, but you stood there and you hugged me and you became tearful as well. And you said, Yolanda, you'll have a place tonight because I'm calling Reverend Miller to make sure you have a place. She did have a place that night. And she continued to have a place because she too built her Habitat for Humanity home. She built it with her two sons. And I'll tell you, that day changed her life. Dale was a happy child. The next years he was with me. Taylor went on to the University Carlson School for Management. He was one of the top students. And every time he comes to church and he sees me, he hugs me and he said, thank you for that day. He said, because it made a difference in our lives as a mother and two boys that didn't know whether or not they had a bed to sleep in that night and food on a table. He said, so I have to give back. And Dr. Henderson, I am giving back. So I'm going to make sure after this luncheon that I call Taylor and tell him how to go on his cell phone to contribute to this luncheon today. So if you find, and I'm quite sure, Habitat for Humanity's office has that magazine with Yolanda on the cover. She says she's now giving back, and she's helping others to build their home. But just stop and think. You have to take the time to say something to an individual because you never know what is happening in their lives. If I hadn't taken the time that day to say to Yolanda, what is wrong? Are you okay? With her two sons standing beside her, tugging at her skirt, looking at me teary-eyed, it would not have been a great ending for Yolanda and her two sons, but rest assured, Taylor, who graduated Carlson School of Management, will contribute. If not, Chris, let me know. I will follow up on
him. We'll check on him. Well, I think I have a job for you now that you're retired, Dr. Henderson, as a fundraiser for Habitat.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
plenty of time on my hand. Aaron came to me and was introducing me to the CEO of Premier Bank, and I told her I would be in contact with her because I'm signing a nonprofit, Dolores Works, And it's getting retired teachers back into the classrooms, working with struggling students, as well as teaching social and emotional learning skills, and working with the parents, and not talking at the parents, but working with them. And when the parents come, I want to know, do you need a job? Do you have housing? What skill sets do you need? And what's interesting, since I retired, I met a young woman who runs a family business. And I said to her, so what do you do? She said, I run the family business. And she said to me, and I have jobs. I said, great, I'm taking you to lunch. And we're going to get jobs for those parents. So any of you out there, and you have jobs, you want to connect with families, and I know I'm going to work very closely with Habitat for Humanity. They're strong, they're willing to work. Stop thinking people who are homeless do not want to work, they don't have an education, they so often has not been dealt the right card in life. So let's work together. Remember, when I come to some of you, Dolores works, nonprofit, you're helping a child, you're helping a family, and you're helping your community become healthier and better. Thank you.
Well, you've touched on a lot of different aspects of the work that we do, one of which I think is important for people to realize. I think a lot of times people think, well, Habitat just deals with people at the very lowest ends of the income spectrum or people without income. In fact, we serve families that are earning up to 80% of area median income, and we are providing those pathways of opportunity. And so I do welcome you all to come to the Habitat website if you don't know enough about us. First of all, while Jimmy Carter is our number one volunteer, he did not found Habitat for Humanity. We do appreciate when he comes out to a build site. But most importantly, it is an organization, I think, that brings people from all sides of the spectrums together in a way that I think we desperately need more of. Mayor Stevens, you and I are on opposite parties, or once were. I'm totally agnostic now. I have no political leanings at all. I had to get rid of them all. But do you see this as well, that housing and the work of Habitat kind of transcends regular partisan political arguments and some of those things? I know we've had a lot of supporters on both sides of the spectrum fighting to help provide affordable housing in our communities. But part of that is because people understand the link between housing for workers and the economic vitality of their communities. And Tawana, I think you could speak to this as well. Can you talk a little bit about that connection and maybe why this is a different issue than some of the other fights that we are in?
Yeah, I'll say it does cross party lines, but it shouldn't. How about I start with that statement? And part of the partisan divide is over some of the policies and the implementation. I think in terms of the issue itself, because it's such a critical issue for all communities to thrive. I know in Woodbury, our goal has always been, even long before I came in to be mayor, really to provide that full range of housing opportunities for all ages and all income levels so that we could respond to changing demographics and meet our house force, our workforce needs at the time. And so that goal hasn't changed, to be an inclusive and welcoming community, and we'll continue to do that. And when you look at the policies of, Habitat, or you look at your structure, that's what makes it successful. And I go back to saying you invest in families, not just communities. So I think from Woodbury's standpoint, we'll continue to partner in those things that are valuable. You heard the word stability. I think that resonates with all of us when you think of home ownership. An environment that is stable, an environment that does allow an accumulation of wealth. When you have an equity or an asset that can grow in wealth, you can use that for your legacy. I think of my dad, 17, I thought growing up in an Italian family of six was a big household. But he built up his equity in his home that allowed him to help fund all six kids to go to college. So we want to continue to provide those opportunities. So that stability there. And really just connecting in your neighborhood. Again, I'll go back to that. So I think they're all important. I think we will and we should continue to work on it as an issue that it's important at a local level and transcends politics and party lines.
I would echo that statement, that it certainly is transcending not only the party and politics lines, but also the lines of regions and the lines of cities, because we find more and more, as we try to get toward more economic growth in our region, we're recognizing that employers need talent, and they need that talent to be able to get to work and to be happy about their ability to get to work. In the same way that we've described children's need for stable housing and thriving housing to be able to go to school every day and thrive when they get to the classroom, the same is true for us. If things are not good at home, things are not good at work. If you have employees who are struggling, we've had research that's been done in places like call centers where employees are struggling to maintain their productivity, or manufacturing plants where employees are struggling to stay focused, or you have employees who are taking calls all day. Often when housing isn't stable, that leads to other bills not being stable as well. And we know that we have a region that is so prosperous, it has no reason to not be able to provide quality, affordable housing to every one of its citizens. I'm grateful that we have, what Jean's been mentioned earlier for her work at Bremer, but I also want to acknowledge the work that's been done by the Governor's Housing Task Force. And I know that by talking to both of the co-chairs of that task force and other people on it, that as they've talked to citizens around this state, they've heard time and time again from people who think they don't know anyone who's homeless. Might think that they don't know anyone who's really struggling, wondering about where they might live next month. The truth is, and I'll tell you this in case you're one of those people, we don't know what we don't know. If you think about, I mentioned a party earlier, that when you're throwing a party and everything isn't just right in your house, maybe there's that picture that you haven't hung up that you've been telling somebody in your house to get hung up for the last 3 months. I'm not complaining, but if you know my husband, can you send him a text? But you think about that, how embarrassed you are about being prepared for that party. Multiply that times 100 when you think about being concerned and embarrassed about not being able to provide quality, stable housing for yourself or for your family. And then you'll understand why people wait until it is past an urgent moment to reach out for help. Because none of us want to admit that we need a little bit of help with being able to provide something that is a fundamental, basic need that every one of us ought to be able to have and ought to be able to access. And that's why it's required that all of the sectors be working hand in hand. And I'm grateful that more and more we're realizing that it isn't a social service need. It isn't something that the nonprofits do or a public service good that the public sector provides through things like vouchers and other development rights. But it's something that all of us have to be concerned about and all of us have to be asking one another about. Are we thriving? Do we need help to be thriving? Do we need connections to the resources that are available in our community so that we can all be thriving?
I'm a little worried you were sitting next to Connie at lunch, and that was an example that you may have taken from her about not getting some things hung up on the wall. Okay, good. We'll be in trouble together. But you said something that I like the phrase, if things aren't good at home, they're not good at work, and I would extend that to school particularly. You know, I know there's a lot of research, Dr. Henderson, on how kids' brains function, and if they're in stress, they're in fight or flight mode, and they literally are unable to absorb the information in the classroom because of the stress levels that they're at. I think a friend of mine who's a psychologist said if they're above a 3 on a scale of 10, their ability to learn is significantly diminished, and so that stability of housing may not cure all of the stresses in their lives. But it's a beginning and creates that. And you've seen that firsthand, I know, from your work.
I want to echo what Tawana and Mayor Mary just mentioned. But you know what, folks? The bottom line is, as Oprah Winfrey said, all of us are one paycheck away from poverty and welfare.
Oprah's not. With the exception of Oprah.
She might be a few. Yeah.
She included herself as well. But with that being said, we need to stop and think about who we are, whose we are, and how we can help with policies. Habitat and many entities have great policies, but do they follow through? Habitat for Humanity follow through with their policies. And that is critical. As I'm looking at a board member who's an emeritus sitting out there, you follow through with it, because I've worked with Habitat for Humanity for years and years and years. And that is critical. As we sit in this room, read policies. Please make sure you follow up with the entities who are making them. Are we around the table? Do we understand them? If not, question. When you talk about stability, we need to begin to read policies and how they affect each and every one of us. And as Chris just mentioned about the brain, it does make a difference as a stress level that is put on one's brain and how one functions. Many of you, you heard what she said about her baby keeping her up all night and how stressful it is. And you don't think it's clearly. And decisions are made so often about us, and we're not around the table, and we have not read about those policies. I live in Mendota Heights, but Chris and everybody who knows me, I'm in St. Paul. I only sleep in Mendota Heights, and I only follow up with politics there when it affects people. And I say to you, let's read policies, let's get involved, let's give, let's do, let's volunteer for us to be a healthier state, and especially here in the Twin Cities for our children and their families.
You know, one of the things that has struck from a lot of in my previous role, but certainly as I've become the CEO of Habitat, is the generosity of our community here in the Twin Cities. It is stunning, and I look out over this room. I know so many of you have been such generous benefactors of Habitat over the years. We have an anonymous donor who has offered to match contributions, again, over $250, up to $25,000, just in case you forgot. We should make sure, are there envelopes by chance on the tables? How many of you in the audience have actually been out on a build site at Habitat? That's amazing. That's really stunning. And that is, we have an army of volunteers, 30,000 volunteer days during the course of a year, over 200,000 volunteer hours, and 17,000 unique volunteers. That is something, that's an incredible army that is giving back to this community. So first of all, give yourselves all a round of applause for that participation.
I'm laughing because I did go out to help, but I wore a pair of white slacks, a white top, and white shoes. They said, never mind, Dr. Henderson, you can't even use a hammer to tap in a nail. And I said, oh, yes, I can. I grew up on a farm. So I did. I wore my all white, but I did stand there, and I did knock and deal with a few nails in wood. So I know what it means, but the next time I did wear the proper attire.
You're management, doctor, you're management. But maybe a little bit of a magic wand question. You know, if you had the power of a volunteer army of 17,000 volunteers or the generosity of a community that is so giving, and you could direct that into one thing that would fundamentally alter what's happening in North Minneapolis or in the schools or out in Woodbury across this region. Tuan, I'm going to start with you, and just what would that look like, and what would you like us to focus on?
My friend is trying to distract me right now. I think if I had a magic wand, it would be actually to erase that question a little bit and erase the boundaries. And go back to what Lanisha shared earlier, to putting us in a space of having room for everyone. But it would require then that all of us start learning about everyone and learning about all of the places in our region that do need more options for affordable housing. And to do that, I would ask each of us to be thinking a little more about self when we think about others. Think about the folks in your family who you have to help once a year, twice a year. The folks in your family who don't have stable housing. The folks in your family who are struggling to keep it all together, who are talked about, you know, in the back of the room on Thanksgiving dinner. And then use that same parallel when you start to think about policies around where housing is located and how housing is built and how we fund and invest in housing. The policies that are put in place about how our public dollars are applied. They're shrinking by the day at the federal level, which requires our cities and our counties and our state to be much more intentional about how those dollars are deployed, and then requires each one of us with our own dollars, our companies with their own dollars, our foundations with their own dollars, to be much more intentional, much more integrated, and much more collaborative in their approaches to how those resources are applied. And then the same is true with our mind share, our time share, how we apply that to get to that place where no one has to wonder about this fundamental need called housing, not just affordable, but quality, thriving housing that positions us to be able to build wealth, to close not just income gaps, not just employment gaps, but wealth gaps that truly set us up for a region and a state and a country where everyone is thriving in their own way, in a way that contributes to the viability of our entire country. That's how I'd wave my magic wand.
Awesome. Mayor?
So, Tawadi, you touched on, you know, the resources are limited. So we want to make sure we're being effective and creative. And I think if I had a magic wand, I would think not so much about magic, but reality and challenge Habitat to continue to be innovative. You know, you mentioned briefly your partnership with Bremer Bank, but that really got out of the box thinking for the traditional model for Habitat and how you build homes. And the ability now to look at existing stock and to finance home buyers to be able to go out and purchase existing homes is a whole new model that's allowing Habitat to leverage additional resources. Bremer is doing what they're great at. Habitat is doing what they're great at. That's what makes for a successful partnership. So really, I'm here to challenge Habitat to continue that innovation, to continue to go out, start partnering with home builders and developers, continue the partnerships, and look to continue growing and thriving communities like Woodbury.
I want to ditto what was the two speakers with their comments, but it's about management. We have to learn how to manage what we have with the limitations of what is occurring with finances in America right now. And we know a lot is occurring that some are very unhappy about, but we have to stay steadfast and remember that we're human beings. And remember that unless we begin to look at diverse development in dealing with building local economic growth, we will never have strong communities. We have to begin to think about the word management. And I think so often, when we think about that word, it's about self. But let's begin to make sure that all of us become more responsible in looking at what is occurring with our federal government, state, as well as local, and what we can do individually to have an impact on local economic growth within our communities.